Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
I think my room used to be haunted by N3 Rumi. My name is Mark. I'm in my early 20s. I have always been fascinated by paranormal stuff, but I have never been a believer. It was basically like an atheist studying the Bible. However, I have experienced some weird stuff. For instance, my room was haunted on two occasions. The first time was when I was 11 and my sister was 9. So when my family was slowly moving to a new house and renovating it, we basically had a set of white walls and no furniture, my sister and I, on many occasions, went to explore our new neighborhood. Once, when we got back from one of our exploring trips, we just sat in our empty room and threw our ball to each other, singing some random nursery rhymes. We were going at it for something over half an hour when suddenly the ball stopped midway to my sister and came back to my hand. I was freaking out. She was too. And we refused to go back there for a while. For some clarification, it was like a heavier dog chewing ball. Also, all of the windows were closed, so there was no wind. And since my room was empty, there was no bouncing from something else. As an adult, I actually spoke about it to my mom, suspecting that it may have been a false memory or something, but she actually confirmed to me that my sister and I once really freaked out over something like that and even refused to sleep in our rooms for over a week. It made her very tired. The next haunting, if you can call it that, happened 4 years later. This time, I wasn't present, but it happened in the same room, and I need to explain a bit about the room situation. I shared my room with my younger brother, who was 10 years old at the time of the haunting, and my sister had her own room next door. So, my brother and I went to my cousin's place to have a sleepover. Since our room was bigger, and we had a bigger TV and DVD player, my sister decided that she wanted to sleep in there. So she goes in the room, watches a few movies, and goes to sleep. In the middle of the night, my fitness/stationary bike started running. Like somebody was literally on it, using it. It was electric, but all of the electronics were long overcooked and damaged. Besides, those were trackers and incapable of moving the bike. So my sister began to scream, and then she went into my parents' room. When we got back, she was terrified. And I had to move to her room for a while since she refused to sleep alone. These stories were both confirmed by our mother.
Apparition in a Catholic Home by Reuben. I grew up in the Bronx, New York, for most of my youth and adolescence. I had what most would consider a somewhat normal childhood, growing up as the eldest of three in an uber-religious Puerto Rican family. Being raised Catholic, some of my earliest memories consisted of my mother reciting the Lord's Prayer and the Hail Mary to me on a nightly basis, and being told stories from the Bible like David and Goliath, in the story of Adam and Eve. Every room in the house had a crucifix hanging above the doorframe, and talks of the miracles of Jesus were a common topic my mother loved to bring up. Discussing anything other than Catholicism was deemed a sin and forbidden by my mother. Anything from the fictitious wizarding world of Harry Potter to even saying the words hell or devil were expressly forbidden. All while my mother was allowed to cuss whenever she felt it was appropriate. Looking back, I believe she ran the house this way, not only to compensate for what she felt were her own religious shortcomings, but also, in a strange way, to protect us. Alongside my earliest religious memories are some relatively dark experiences I've had no issues recounting to others, but ones I truly haven't come to terms with until writing this down. While all of these memories are unique and vastly different from one another, I've always felt they were connected in some odd way. The first of these experiences happened at the age of 5. I had a bedroom of my own, and shortly after my younger brother was born, my father, a New York City police officer, was promoted to sergeant. This meant more money for a struggling household, and with that change, my parents bought me a brand new set of twin beds. I remember thinking these beds were the coolest, since they could be stacked to create a bunk bed. Due to my inability to stay still in my sleep and my energetic nature, my parents thought it was best to keep these beds side by side. On one of the first nights in my brand new bed, I awoke in the middle of the night to find myself in a very peculiar position. As I opened my eyes, my face was to the ceiling. I was levitating. The moment lasted for only a few seconds before I was suddenly dropped back down to my bed. But the memory sticks with me to this day. I remember thinking for a second the experience was only a dream, but that possibility was completely ruled out by my furious father, who stormed into my room and turned on my bedroom light just a few seconds after it happened. "What was that?" he asked. "Are you jumping on your bed? Why are you awake?" "I wasn't, Dad," I replied. For a moment, I struggled to tell him what actually happened, before uttering, "I was floating." My father dismissed it, believing I had fallen off the bed after having a nightmare. He sternly told me to get back to sleep. I remember staying awake for hours after this, trying to make sense of what just happened. For the rest of the next morning, I was left trying to determine if the whole night was just a big dream. About 3 years later, I was in the living room, watching my nightly episode of Rugrats, when I heard my mother yell from the kitchen, "Reuben, go take a shower." I quickly jumped off the couch, ran upstairs to my room, and gathered a towel and my pajamas. When I walked out of my room, I saw something that will forever be permanently ingrained in my memory. A man, who I'd never seen before in my life, stood in the doorway of my parents' room. His hair was slicked back. He was wearing a black button-down shirt and gray dress pants. His skin was so pale, he looked like he was ripped from a black-and-white television show. But the most haunting thing I'll never forget was his face. His eyes were opened so wide, with a face so demented, I could feel the evil radiating off his presence. I knew I was in danger. The only thing I could think to do was drop all of my clothes and scream at the top of my lungs while I ran back downstairs. My mother, reasonably alarmed, asked me what happened. I struggled to catch my breath, but I managed to get out that there was a man upstairs by her room. She knew we were the only ones in the house, yet she believed me. She ran upstairs, Bible in hand, and all I could remember next was hearing her screaming from downstairs at the top of her lungs. Get out of my house. You're not welcome here. You're not welcome around my children. Get out. I was scared of being upstairs by myself for weeks after this. I never felt any sense of security in that house since. When we moved to the suburbs outside of New York when I was 13, I was excited about it for so many reasons. It meant a new school, away from the bullying I was experiencing. It meant a fresh start. But most importantly, it meant being out of that house and away from the memories I had there. 6 months into living in our new suburban home, I was awakened at around 2:30 in the morning. In this new home, my room was downstairs, away from everyone else in the house, so there was nothing around me to explain what I heard. What sounded like a radio tuning between channels was echoing from just outside my bedroom. Initially, I dismissed it as just another noise the house was making that I wasn't used to yet. I rolled over and tried to get back to sleep, and was well on my way there, when the tuning noise stopped, and I could hear what sounded like a crowd of people cheering. It sounded as if it was coming from a radio. Thinking it was coming from my alarm clock, I slapped the snooze button, but the noise continued. I slapped the snooze button again, and even turned the alarm on and then off again. The cheering continued, but this time with a voice. From outside my room, I could hear, "Happy New Year from Times Square, 1962. I was immediately freaked out. I threw the covers over my head and shut my eyes, in an attempt to ignore what was going on. I covered my ears and eventually fell asleep. The next morning, I told my mother, and to no surprise, she didn't believe me. 2 years later, on a random afternoon, I came home from school to find my mother abnormally quiet in the kitchen. She was washing dishes, and I walked over to kiss her on the cheek and let her know I was home. I didn't get the same reaction I normally got. Instead, she seemed bothered. I asked her if everything was okay. Do you remember the tuning radio noise you told me you heard a couple of years ago? She asked me. Yes, I replied, confused. Well, I heard it last night. According to my mother, she also heard it at around 2:30 in the morning. She said it lasted for a few seconds before abruptly stopping. Following that, she heard chanting outside her bedroom. A moment later, she saw what appeared to be candlelight coming from down the hallway. It grew bigger, as if it was approaching her room. My mother said at this moment, she grabbed her rosary and began praying, "In the name of the Father, of the Son." Before she could finish, the light suddenly went out and the chanting stopped. She fearfully prayed the rosary and paced around for a few hours before she could go back to sleep. I remember coming home from school that day, and my room had a strong smell of roses. I asked my mom if she planted roses outside of my bedroom window or something. She immediately started tearing up and told me she had the house blessed by a priest earlier that day. She became emotional because, according to scripture, the rose is the flower of the Virgin Mary. I haven't experienced any other paranormal activity since. Even now at 32 years old, I think about these events often and can't help but feel these encounters came from the same spirit that stood outside my parents' door that night, utterly terrifying me when I was 8 years old. That evil spirit had something to do with all of it. I'm convinced his presence followed me from one home to the other as a child. I'm not sure if I'll ever find out, but now, with children of my own, I think I'm okay with that. Shout out to AstroPro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. I don't know whether to laugh or cry about the irony, but I use AstroPro for allergy relief. It's pretty remarkable that they sponsored us in an episode where I'm clearly not doing so well. My throat is going to need some time to heal, but luckily AstroPro has kept my congestion down and allowed me to power through this episode. If you have allergies, give it a try. AstroPro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. AstroPro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. AstroPro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. One of the most annoying allergy symptoms I deal with is an itchy nose, so I just pull my AstroPro out of my shirt pocket, give my schnoz a little bit of that psh psh, and I'm ready to rock and roll. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with AstroPro. Go to AstroProAllergy.com so you can AstroPro and go today. AstroProAllergy.com. AstroPro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Mechanical Noise by Bad Lungs McGee. Over 10 years ago, when I was in my 20s, I was sharing a townhouse with my partner. We were an end unit, connected only on the right side of the home to the rest of the houses. We had lived there for about a year or two when this happened, and during that time, never once heard a single sound coming from our neighbors who shared the other side of our wall. One night, probably at 2 or 3 a.m., I woke up to the sound of our neighbor coughing. I immediately recognized how odd that was because we had never heard them at all through the wall. The coughing continued nonstop and appeared to get louder to the point where it no longer seemed to be coming from our neighbor, but now inside my bedroom, almost as if the origin of the sound had drifted through the wall and toward me. The sound continued to drift toward me, and I started to breathe heavily, like I was scared out of my mind. As it came to me and settled what felt like 2 feet directly over me, the sound kind of morphed into this mechanical sound, very similar to a scene from The Matrix where Neo's scream becomes synthesized. This crescendoed above me and then suddenly stopped. My partner then woke up, not from the sound, but from the feeling of me panicking and breathing heavily. I told her about what happened, and she said something like, "Definitely just a weird dream, half awake, half asleep thing, but you do seem really scared." We tried to go back to sleep, but within a few minutes, the whole experience happened again. Only this time, my partner could hear all of it too. We were silently gripping onto each other very tightly as it was happening. And now both of us were panicking. I don't know why we didn't say anything or get out of bed, but we both had a need to stay quiet and not draw attention to ourselves feeling. It happened just the same as before, and when it was done, we both turned on our bedside lights and spent the rest of the night awake watching TV. I've never heard somebody else have this same kind of experience. The thought of sharing this here is to see if this rings true for anyone else out there.
My Great Grandma's Funeral by The Jaywalker. This happened almost 20 years ago. Why it happened and how it worked, I don't know. I don't know how to classify this story either. A dream? Yes. Premonition? Maybe. Deja vu? Possibly. But here we go. My great-grandmother died in 2004 at 99 years old, just 4 months shy of her 100th birthday. Shortly after her death, but before her funeral, I had a dream. In this dream, I was at a church. It was a Mormon church. I grew up Mormon, but I'm not currently practicing. It was a building I was familiar with, as my great-grandfather's funeral had been there, and my grandparents had their 50th wedding anniversary party at the same place. So being at this church didn't feel off or particularly a problem. I wasn't exactly sure why I was there during the dream, but again, I didn't feel off about being there either. While I'm sitting there in the chapel, I'm aware of other people around me, but I'm not paying much attention to who they are. A gentleman then gets up and starts speaking, and I listen to about 5 minutes of his speech. Fast forward a few days to the date of my great-grandma's funeral. Maybe halfway through the service, I start to feel like I have lived or have seen the scene unfolding before me. A gentleman gets up to speak. It's the same man from my dream, who happens to be my great uncle Jim. I had met him a handful of times, but it had been a number of years since I last saw him. I remembered his speech and thought my way through it, about 4 or 5 words ahead. His speech lasted for a few minutes beyond where my dream ended, but it was an amazing thing to have dreamed the speech. Why did it happen? Was it Grandma Reva's way of letting me know everything was okay? Just a weird premonition? Nothing like this has happened to me before, or has happened since. At least, not for that length of time. I never felt afraid or weird about this situation. It just felt peaceful.
I Saw a Murder in My Mind by Anonymous. I've always been the kind of girl that is labeled as hypersensitive, too much, and dramatic. I feel things deeply, and I'm bothered by things that don't really bother anyone else. As an adult, I've found that I have ADHD and some sensory issues. My mind tends to race 1,000,000 miles per hour, and the creative ADHD has been both a blessing and a curse. Being ultra-sensitive helps me be better at my job as an elementary school teacher who works with students with neurodiverse brains like mine. It also helps me to be a better mother to my own children. I have always been able to understand people in a way that no one else does because I feel like I know them and I know their life story within just a few minutes of meeting them. I'm that person that you confess your deepest, darkest secrets and trauma to when you sit by me on an airplane, because people feel weirdly comfortable around me. And as a chronic people watcher, I always thought that I was just making up narratives for people. But sometimes the narratives are perfectly accurate, and I've recently come to accept that I'm reading the energy that naturally exists around people. Unfortunately, though, what I thought was just ultra-sensitivity and people feeling socially accepted around me was actually a manifestation of intuitive gifts. I was raised in a very religious household where ghosts did not exist. When weird paranormal things started happening to me as a child, I would have to force myself under the covers and sleep with the lights on because I knew that nobody in my family would even entertain the idea of anything outside of our strict religious rules. There was this tall, dark shadow man with a top hat who would lean far over my bed and look directly into my face. There was also the spirit of a bear that would poke its head into my room if the door was kept ajar. I kept all of these strange things that happened to me close to my chest because I knew I would never be believed. As an adult, I guess I've found myself in a way. It turns out I'm an evidential medium and intuitive. I came to this discovery after an experience that still leaves me with the pit in my stomach when I think about it. This is because it's difficult for me to accept that it was even real. It was early spring and my father and I had drove to a nearby city with my children to take my oldest son to the dentist. We live in a very rural area, so we had to drive 4 hours round trip just to go to Costco, Walmart, or in this case, a pediatric dentist. I've always been very familiar with the drive to this nearby city because we have driven it multiple times a month for 32 years of my life. I could drive it blindfolded. For most of the drive, there's nothing but fields and farms. There's also a rest stop. It's an unsuspecting rest stop, and it's actually pretty luxurious, but kind of creepy. It's 20 miles from any houses or towns and on a cliff overlooking the Snake River. This day, we were cruising down the road when we came to that rest stop. I needed to go to the bathroom and change the baby's diaper, so I asked my dad ahead of time to make a pit stop for us. As we got closer to the rest stop, I could see yellow crime scene tape being unrolled by an officer and the whirl of lights from a police vehicle. I internally groaned because I didn't want to have to go to the bathroom on the side of the road, but it looked like something had happened and the police were just getting there to investigate. It would be my luck that the one time a crime happened was today, right when my bladder was about to explode. But then, I suddenly forgot about my irritation and full bladder. The hair on my arms and neck stood on end. The best way I can describe it is that in my mind's eye, I saw a younger man and an older man arguing in the dark, and the younger man was shot by the older one. The older man had a cowboy mustache and some sort of long white hair. The man who was shot fell face down next to a maroon-colored vehicle. The more I, quote-unquote, tuned in, the more information popped into my mind. In my mind, I then saw the older man get into his car and drive off at high speed. My dad then broke the silence and mentioned that crime never happens around here. I wonder if it was a kidnapping or something. I shook my head. No, somebody was shot, I said. He kind of chuckled awkwardly. We were close enough to see a little more now. There was a body covered with a white sheet, right next to a small maroon truck. Even typing this right now, my head is starting to hurt. My chest feels tight. I could clearly picture the younger man in my head at that moment. He was short, maybe 5'8", with black facial hair, a plaid shirt, a baseball hat with a work logo, and work boots. I got that he was maybe a dad and that he was having some substance abuse issues. I wondered if the fight had been over drugs or money. I even had the impression that, in life, he loved to go hunting and be outdoors. I felt so sad for him because I could tell that he was full of regret and didn't think that it would all end this way. He had been a good person who got involved with the wrong crowd. At one time, I thought it was one of my crazy narratives again, and that it couldn't possibly be true. Obviously, I had been listening to too many true crime podcasts, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't stop thinking about him. I watched the news like a hawk, and it wasn't until we were sitting at the dentist office that a news article was posted to the local news website about a shooting that had occurred during the early morning / late night hours at the isolated rest stop. It gave the victim's name, and I immediately did what anybody in my position would do. I looked up the victim on Facebook. My heart stopped. He looked exactly as I had pictured, and though there were a few pictures of him, I saw that we had a couple of friends in common and wanted to know more. My friend confirmed every single thing that I had felt about this person. He was an avid hunter, a father to a little boy, and a known drug user. My friend said that she had known him her whole life and that he was soft-spoken and kind, but that she could imagine that the confrontation was over drugs or money. Fast forward a few months later, there didn't seem to be any movement in this young man's case. I was starting to lose hope for him. I knew full and well that being killed in Idaho meant that your case may never be solved, at least until that mutual friend I had texted me a link to an article. There had been an arrest. The man was in his 50s, a gray mullet, a white cowboy mustache. The trial is set for late July, later this year. I'm hoping for justice. I've never felt more validated in what I know are my abilities. This was just the kickstarter to exploring all the facets of spirituality that I had turned a blind eye to because of my upbringing. I'm learning that there is so much more out there than what you observe with your five senses on a day-to-day basis. When things happen now, I just smile and lean into it, instead of letting it shock me and make me more unsettled. We all have certain amounts of intuition, and we can all tap into it if we allow ourselves to experience it. Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid. As I got older, I had to watch out for sugar and empty carbs, though. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors that you love, but high protein and less sugar. They have a variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. I can't get enough of the peanut butter flavor. We always have to have a box in the cupboard. You can go to magicspoon.com/trails to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code TRAILS at checkout to save $5 on your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, start your day off with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/trails and use the code TRAILS to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Now back to the show. So the other day I was streaming this really interesting point-and-click adventure game on Twitch. It's called The Blackwell Legacy.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that one. How is it?
Well, I still have to finish it. It's a bit cryptic, but I like the story and the voice acting. It's all really good. Anyway, it got me thinking about our past chats about an Odd Trails video game.
Yeah, we had a lot of good ideas for a nice story-based game. A point and click would be awesome, especially with like the retro pixel graphics like Blackwell.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that that kind of game can be relatively inexpensive to develop in comparison to like action games, because they can be fully designed in Adventure Game Studio. So I just want to put the word out there. I'm willing to invest in your talent if you're currently working with or have any kind of connection with any of those amazing studios out there like Wadget Eye that are putting these types of games out.
Yeah, let's get the ball rolling on that. We actually have quite a bit of ideas mapped out.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there is serious and knows a thing or two about game development, drop us a line. stories@oddtrails.com or DM us on Instagram @oddtrailspodcast. Let's make it happen.
Yeah. And if you're curious about these kinds of games or just want to check out the Blackwell Legacy or just chat about ideas, I'll be finishing the game as well as the other Wadget Eye games on my channel at twitch.tv/crypticcounty. Sometimes I'm even able to convince Brandon to get on there with me, but he's such a busy bee.
Yeah. Either that or I'm sick.
Yeah.
For those keeping score, I believe this is the second episode where my voice box decided to line itself with frog eggs.
I'm just glad you're rolling with it. Honestly, considering how sick you were, I was pleasantly surprised at how your recordings came out this week after hearing you on Discord last night, because I was fully prepared to push the episode back, so bravo.
Well, thank you. It's whatever. Editing has been more annoying than my throat itself. So many butchered sentences and coughing interruptions. I hate it.
Yeah, but the show's gotta go on, as they say.
I just look at it as like a biological pop-up window or a captcha screen.
Yeah.
Annoying, but at least the computer still works, you know?
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
I try my best. But yeah, I figured the froggy tonality adds a little spice to the episode, if anything else. I sound like Matilda's friend who says, wow.
Yeah, I love Matilda.
Love Miss Honey.
Well, we all did.
You know that scene where Matilda's brother is following her down the hallway, pelting her with marshmallows?
Have another marshmallow, dip face.
Yeah, I was going to say, my dad jumped up from the couch and turned off the DVD player when that happened, because we were watching it with my brother and sister, who were like 5 and 6 at the time. He was so outraged, and he was like, I can't believe they would ruin a perfectly good family movie with that language.
Oh, he didn't think that he said dip face.
Right. He heard something other than dip with a P. Good times. But for some reason, Austin Powers 2 was totally fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even feel sick. It was just some post-nasal drip or acid reflux that turned into a wicked cough, and then that killed my voice. I could have waited a bit, but I hate making excuses for myself or feeling like I'm letting anybody down. I figure dealing with the frog voice is better than ruining people's Monday routine.
Yeah, I hear you. Just take care of yourself. It sucks getting sick when podcasting is your actual job, because you can't exactly call out sick like a typical job. I mean, not that you should go in sick, but sometimes you just don't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, when this happens, I feel like a voice actor who called out sick while everybody else is just at the studio twiddling their thumbs. I think pushing through was the right move, though. A fever is basically the only thing that I'll fully submit to and tap out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So I just want to say that while I'm thankful for the story, I'm also extremely sorry for Anonymous and their spooky clairvoyance in the I Saw a Murder in My Mind story.
Yeah, that's not an ability I would prefer to have.
Yeah, and as somebody with a history of anxiety, I would often have those intrusive thoughts of like something bad happening to my wife while she was driving home from work, or one of my dogs is getting out when I'm gone and getting hit by a car. You know, I would always tell the powers that be, now is not the time to bless me with the second sight.
Yeah, I mean, since we're being transparent, my anxiety has been getting a lot worse too. And not a lot, but I'll try not to derail too much, but I spent most of my life with untreated, inattentive type ADHD, and about a month ago, I finally found a doctor who didn't just dismiss me as being lazy or depressed.
Yeah.
So now this medication actually has me feeling focused, motivated, and happy with my general existence. It's nice. Mm-hmm. But there's a trade-off with everything, and I sometimes get bad bouts of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, though, I'd rather continue dealing with that than go back to how I was living before being put on medication. It's overall a net gain, even if that part of it sucks.
Well, we're all in it together. Anxiety, that is.
I do like that you said that you have a history of anxiety. It kind of puts it in the past and hopefully creates some sort of separation from the present and future.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you caught that. I've stopped saying out loud that I have chronic anxiety. I feel like it reinforces the anxious thoughts and all of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've been doing a lot better in the last few months, I've learned to speak, I guess, more kindly to myself. And like you said, refer to my anxiety as something of the past.
Yeah, it's sort of like the law of attraction in a way.
Yeah, and now that I'm being more cognizant of my thoughts and the way that I talk to myself, I'm realizing just how brutal I was in the past when I would scold myself for making a mistake or doing something stupid.
Oh yeah, I can definitely relate. I usually get that way over social situations well after the fact. I'll go so far as to replay some interaction in my mind and reanalyze the other person's tone or body language from memory and assume they hate me or something, even though the memory, of course, isn't accurate at that point.
Yeah.
But as far as work goes, it's the perfectionists in us. But I think we're getting better about knowing when it's okay to accept things as they are and not being too picky, because ultimately we can't be perfect.
Yeah, you always hear about perfectionism as if it's always a positive trait. But in someone with my kind of personality, it resulted in years of verbal and mental self-abuse.
Yeah, words are everything. Like when a doctor tells you not to worry about that pain or weird sensation, they give you that reassurance. And when you go home, you can feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it just goes away. Like I've said before a million times, the placebo effect is just a form of magic. Like, I wish we could access all of the amazing parts of our brain, like the part that controls the placebo.
And that could be exactly the same kind of magic that the author was able to tap into, seeing all the details of the murder before they even learned about it.
Yeah, we're capable of a lot more than I think we know.
That is true. So on to Ruben's story. It seems that his mom knew what was up all along, as far as taking precautions with the paranormal.
Yeah, man. Catholics don't mess around with that kind of stuff. I think it just goes to show how real a lot of this stuff is, with people of so many different backgrounds having such strong convictions about it all.
Right. Every culture seems to have its own variation of your everyday demon, for example.
Yeah.
Even Scandinavian countries, which are pretty secular and grounded, they have their fair share of lore. And I don't mean like Norse gods, but there's a humanoid called a Holdra that apparently just looks like a beautiful woman, but she has a cow or fox tail that she tries to hide.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about that. It's like a shapeshifter or something too, right?
I'm pretty sure. I just remember the tail thing. And that she is apparently very seductive and lures men into forests, What happens to them after that is anybody's guess.
All right, then. Don't go on hikes with strangers. Noted.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some underlying morals to her full story, but for now, we can go with that. Back to Ruben's story. So before he saw that pale guy or levitated in his bed, he had mentioned how strictly religious his mom was, and the fact she instinctively grabbed her Bible when he told her someone was in the house without giving any indication it was an entity or something tells me she probably grew up experiencing this stuff and maybe hasn't told Ruben her full life story.
Yeah, I definitely agree. She was also so strict about what they were allowed to talk about in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It may seem superstitious or controlling, and maybe to a degree it was, but I'm getting the feeling that she was just acting from experience and being extra cautious to protect her family.
Yeah, mother knows best. I'm glad you got the same vibe from her.
Mm-hmm.
The way he described the man he saw really creeped me out, but I'm trying to figure out the New Year's radio noise.
Yeah.
Why would that be playing on any day other than New Year's?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he definitely would have specified and connected those dots if he and his mom both heard it on New Year's.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one either. Obviously, it's really interesting that his mom heard it later on too, but I can't really think of the significance.
What's the significance? I don't know. Sorry, I just had to quote Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That's top three movie for sure.
Yeah, I know.
American Psycho, The Shining, Pee-wee. There we go. Anyway, I'm sure there's some deep analysis and theorizing to be had about the concept of time and alternate dimensions as far as the New Year's thing not lining up on the right day.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it was in 1962 also, so there's that as well. But I think we can both agree that this one is just over our heads.
Yeah, definitely. It's a cool story regardless. That levitating thing was pretty weird too.
Maybe it could have just been a hypnic jerk. You know, like when you get that feeling of falling in your sleep and you like jolt awake.
Oh yeah, I've had plenty of those. But it wouldn't have been so loud to have his dad barge in, right?
Oh yeah, that is true. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's that. It's going to have to be because I need to really rest my voice.
Mm-hmm.
The other stories were great too, but as said, I need to give my voice a rest. Thank you for sending those in. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much, everyone. And make sure you send your stories into stories@oddtrails.com. All the stories you heard this week were narrated and produced with the permission of their respective authors. Make sure you sign up for our Patreon if you want to get access to all of our episodes ad-free at a higher bit rate. You can do that at patreon.com/oddtrails. And make sure you check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and the Old Time Radio Cast at crypticcountypodcasts.com. See you all next week, everyone. Stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.